Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Monday morning, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Adam Kimmelman from NHL.com will be with us at 7:30. We'll go over the Stanley Cup playoffs, the NHL draft lottery with him later this hour at 7:30. So looking forward to that. Corey Curtis from News 2 at 8 o'clock for his weekly visit. And Joe, later today, Barry Trotz will be addressing the media. It will be the first time he has addressed the media since the season has come to an end. He was originally supposed to do it, I believe, the Wednesday after the season ended. So that would have been, I think, exactly 1 week after the regular season came to an end. And it's taken a little longer. And we've spent a lot of time discussing what that means and what the reason could be for why it's taken him so long to address the media after all this has taken place. I said it the other day. I think they announced last Wednesday that Barry Trotz was speaking today. So it was difficult for me to believe that they had come to the conclusion that they were going to fire Andrew Burnett and then say, we'll have a press conference in 5 days. Like, it's very difficult for me to believe that that's the way things are going to go. So I would give the chances of that happening today almost zero. Like, I don't think he's going to walk up on stage and be like, yeah, Andrew Burnett's not the coach anymore. I'd be stunned if that took place at this point. The question is, what is he going to say? Is he going to say definitively that Andrew Burnett is back next year? Is he going to do what Alex Doherty said on our show the other day, which is say that they're still evaluating here and leave the options open? I don't think that's a great idea either, but we'll wait and see what happens. But let's operate, Joe, under the assumption that he comes up there today and he says Burnett is back and they've gone through their process here and that Burnett is coming back as head coach. A lot of Predators fans aren't going to like that, given the way that this season went. I don't know how to assign a percentage to it. You know, we hear from a lot of angry Preds fans a lot about the coach and the moves and all those things. How many are going to be really upset with Andrew Burnett coming back? I don't know. I do think it's a significant percentage. But frankly, like, at this point, I would probably expect it if you're one of those Predators fans.
Yeah, you can't be surprised right now.
Exactly. So, given that, and given the way the season went, is there anything Barry Trotz can say today where if you're a Predators fan, you hear it and you're like, all right, I've got a little bit of hope, a little bit of optimism heading into next year? Or have we reached the point with this current setup where it's like, man, you're just going to have to show me before I believe any sort of optimism that's coming your way out of the organization here? I'm very interested to see if he does what I think he's going to do today, which is get up there and say that Andrew Burnett is coming back. I'm very interested to see what his process was, how much detail he's willing to go into about it, and frankly, what he thinks about some of the comments from Mark Tissot and Stamkos and all those guys that we've talked about in the aftermath of the season.
Yeah, definitely don't, and I wouldn't expect it from Barry, but it's kind of like, you know, you go back to the Cam Ward being drafted. Was he number one on your road? Yep. So, yeah, the idea of like, oh, there was never any doubt. There was never any doubt. We just didn't want to tell you guys. I mean, clearly this has been a process that has involved some serious thinking.
Well, I hope he doesn't say that, because we know there was doubt, because Andrew Burnett had doubt after the season.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he basically said, well, I'll move on. I will survive. He went Gloria Gaynor on his presser.
He did.
So, yeah, thank you. It's clearly this was a tough decision, and it's not an easy one. And so I hope with Barry Trotz, he's often an open book, more than a lot of people. So I don't expect him to say, yeah, you know, March is so really ripped him, guys. And I tell you, I mean, I don't expect any that level of transparency, but some transparency. And again, why? Why is he the right guy for you? And why do you think it will be different when you know that for the most part, the roster isn't going to be vastly different.
Right.
So why does this roster and this coach, why do you believe that that can work?
Right.
You know, what are the adjustments he needs to make? You know, all that stuff. But, yeah, I expect the presser today to be that, basically, the explanation of why Andrew Burnett's the coach again. And also, okay, so what's the expectation for next year? Because look, whether Barry Trotz believes it or not, certainly the outside world is going to have Andrew Burnett right at the very top of those hot seat lists going into the season.
Yes, and his players, you know, the veteran players that we've talked about, and Stamkos and Marchessault we heard from directly on this. But look, to me, you can throw Philip Forsberg in this. You could throw Soros. You could throw Yossi, O'Reilly. Like, their expectation is to compete and win next year. Now, how realistic is that going to be with where they're at right now? I have no idea. But like Stamkos has talked about it, you know, they're not really interested in any quote unquote rebuild. They're not really interested in that, nor should they be.
No.
So
heck no.
I would imagine that the plan communicated to them is not that. I mean, I think we'd be running into some problems here if that was the plan communicated from Barry Trotz to these players. So what exactly, you know, he's not going to go into detail. Well, I'm going to trade for this player and I'm going to make this move. I understand that heading into today, but like clearly, if you believe your players are on board with this, you have to, in my opinion, have communicated some sort of plan this offseason that you're going to get them back in contention. Like, it cannot be, nor do I think it is, as simple as, well, we'll just try it again next year with the same exact setup and hope that we get better results. Like, I think if that's what your expectation is heading into next year, it could be another long year at that point.
Yeah, but also, but what can you really say in terms of, like you said, obviously it's not going to be the specific move that you might make, but you also don't know that you're going to be able to make a move, right?
Right.
So, I mean, they have to. Like, you don't want to give a false promise.
No, I mean, you can have a better idea, I think, of a free agency move that you can make. Like, you got a rough idea of who's going to be available at this point and your strategy to go land one of those players. Or so maybe they've got a couple of guys, and maybe it's not as high-priced or as, you know, star-powered as it was a year ago, but maybe they've got a plan for a couple additions there in free agency. They do have draft capital, like, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to look at their draft capital right now and say, all right, you got a lot of assets. You've got some good assets in Milwaukee that you can use via trade. So there probably will be some opportunities out there on both fronts that you could try to take advantage of if you're Barry Trotz. Just how much can you actually change your team in one offseason going that route, given where their roster is right now? And frankly, like, how much does the rest of this day play into that? Like, you know, if they go out there and land the number one overall pick tonight, what's that going to mean for their roster next year? And we're going to get into some options from that front coming up here in just a few minutes. But that, I think that's going to be a big part of, I think, the discussion point today, too, from Trotz. It's probably going to be like, well, you know, got a big opportunity coming up tonight. We'll see what exactly that looks like. We had a question earlier about, like, the offense and what's going down with the offense on the Predator side of things and why couldn't they score this year. That, as you know, as much as I'm interested in Burnett and the players and all that, and the comments from the players and all that today, I'm really interested to see Trotz's thoughts on that. Like, as a former coach, like, clearly what they did, as Marchessault said, clearly it didn't work. That was his response to the system that they ran this year. So what's going to be different? And if you're keeping the coach, how much different can it actually be? Like, how much different do you want it to be if you're keeping the coach?
Right, and that's the thing. You know, that's where you can really change things if you made this move, you know, and you could – by the idea that it could be way different even with a lot of the same guys. Some of the answer is, as all these veterans, some of them said it too, is like they have to play better.
Yep.
Individually, collectively, they have to play better. But not, you know, not firing the coach, bringing back the coaching staff means that it's more on, yep. I mean, it's more on them and it's more on whatever roster change that you can, you know, that you can make here. Derek from Nolensville, Fridays for Nights, says if he doesn't fire Burnett, then he's admitting it was his mistake this year. If that's the case, Trotz gets one more year, and then he can fire himself. Yeah, I don't know if he's going to do that, but I do think there's a shift, and I get it. A little bit of, like, okay, so is Trotz the issue here? And keeping Burnett is not going to endear him, you know, not that I expect him to care. I mean, it's just about getting the results. But keeping Burnett, which he's going to announce today, is not going to, like, I mean, like, more fans are going to be upset with him because of that.
I would think so. I mean, again, when you see a season go off the rails as much as this one did, you know, people feel like heads need to roll at that point. So when heads don't roll, it's going to be a natural reaction from your fan base. Like, you know, I look, Burnett, I think when they're in the offensive zone, they don't do a whole lot different from other teams in the league, right? Like, a lot of the offensive zone stuff is the same league-wide. It's more the defensive zone stuff and getting through the neutral zone, which is way different from Andrew Brunette's system. And they've talked about that at length. And Stamkos specifically, when he's talked about, like, the system challenges, a lot of it has been about when he's played at center, he's doing different things in the defensive zone at center than he's ever had to do in his career. So there's that. And Marchessault talked at the end of the year about some adjustments that they made that largely came in the defensive zone and in the neutral zone. The offensive zone, you know, this is too simplistic of it, but a lot of the offensive zone is also read and react, right? Like, what's in front of you? Can you get around the defense and get to the middle there? Like, how good is your passing there? Like, a lot of it is simple execution in the offensive zone, which, frankly, they didn't do a good enough job of that this year either. But one thing that stands out to me is this is supposed to be a team, Joe, that generates a ton of off-the-rush chances. Like, that's what this system really wants to take advantage of. And I look at their roster, their age, frankly, their speed right now, and I say, do they really have the personnel to do that? Like, can you take advantage of offensive zone rush chances with this group right now? And if not, how do you tweak your system to get things more set up maybe a little bit more deliberately than maybe Andrew Brunette wants to have it set up?
Yeah, so then you're just playing a totally different – and then how married is he to that?
Right.
Again, he obviously made some adjustments this year. He talked to the players. He took feedback, made adjustments, but at what point
– yeah.
Are you – you know, like, you still have to, like, play how you believe that you want to play. And it is a system that's been successful.
Well, and I thought Stamkos had interesting comments on it at the end of the year. He's like, is there any, like, one specific thing that has to change with the system? He said, I don't really know that there is, but there's some adjustments and tweaks, I think he said, that you can make along the way that do not involve, like, total system overhaul that you can make heading into next year. So what are those? And can Andrew Brunette do it? That's going to be the question.
And so then I get back into – so – you could have a coach who has experience with veterans and has, you know, things. I mean, that was the argument. But Obviously I think that's not the way he's going.
I don't think that it is. Also, a big day for the Predators. The NHL draft lottery is today, and the Predators could join the Titans as teams around here that have the number one overall pick. We'll get into that coming up next. And if they do, if they don't, they're not picking anywhere worse than fifth. So what are the options that are going to be on the table? We'll get into all that. Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
At this point in time, Adam, I don't – as we do this phone call today at 109 your time on a Thursday afternoon, I don't have any reason to believe that the Predators are making any kind of change. You know, Andrew Brunette is leaving for Sweden and Denmark – for the World Championships as part of the Team Canada staff. I don't have any reason to believe you guys are doing it. I think it is naive to the extreme to look at the quality of people who are out there right now, Adam, and think that they hadn't at least discussed it internally. But I don't have any reason to believe, like, just should we contact any of these people? How do we feel about any of these people? I think you're not, I don't think you're a good organization if you don't at least ask it internally, but I have no reason to believe as we do this right now, the Predators are going to be doing that.
That was Elliot Friedman last week with DVD on the Andrew Brunette front. Barry Trotz speaking later today to the media, and we'll see if there's an answer definitively on the Andrew Brunette front. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Let's head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Steve in Franklin. Steve, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Good morning, guys. Hey, I would like to hear Barry Trotz say that he's willing to upgrade the goaltender position. Saros this past season gave up more soft goals than ever before. He got yanked out of games more than ever before. And as the season went along, I felt better when the backup goaltender was playing than when he was in there. But I know he's not going to say that, but that's what I wish he would say. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. I mean, they're stuck with goalie. Like, the goalie ain't going anywhere. They've got an 8-year contract that's kicking in here in a few weeks. I mean, it is what it is. He's going to have to play better. Like, that's going to be a huge part of this, is can he play better next year?
Yeah. It's Very discouraging what happened last year, but you're not bailing out on that. You've got a couple years of please be good.
So, Joe, very quickly on the NHL draft lottery front. That is tonight for the Predators. They are currently third, so they finished with the third worst record in the league. They've got the lottery coming up tonight. Their odds to land the number one overall pick are at 11.5%. So for context, San Jose finished the worst record in the league, and they have a 25.5% chance to pick number one overall. Chicago at 13.5, Nashville at 11.5. So the Preds have the third highest odds to pick number one. They could end up as low as fifth. So you can only move down two spots if you're the Predators tonight. So they're going to be picking somewhere between 1 and 5. We'll see what that looks like for Nashville come tonight. And for the conspiracy theorists out there, they're doing the draft lottery live for the ping pong balls on TV. So they're not huddling up in a back room and walking out with the Chicago Blackhawks ping pong ball.
Doesn't mean the Blackhawks one isn't frozen beforehand.
It doesn't mean that. No,
that's cool.
We'll see what happens live tonight.
However it works.
Here, the latest from Bob McKenzie over the weekend, who is a longtime TSN hockey insider here. And the consensus still remains what we've talked about a lot here on the show, that Matthew Schaefer, the defenseman, is the number one player in the draft. It was unanimous at one point. It's not quite unanimous now, according to McKenzie. He says that Misa has kind of creeped into some people's thoughts as he should be the number one player. McKenzie also points out that a lot of that is because of the position he plays, and it's center rather than defenseman, and they just value centermen more. But Misa, I think, has become kind of the guy at center, and I've talked about him for a while. That would be who I would like to see the Predators pick. You know, it is interesting. We've talked a lot about James Hagans as well, who is the center from Boston College. He was number two on the list for the majority of the year, and McKenzie talked about it here, says he slipped down to five on their list that they put together. They've got Porter Martone, the winger that we've talked about, and they've also got another centerman, Anton Frondell, a forward that's come in and has entered that discussion as well. McKenzie says, Hagans is the only one who slipped, checking in at number five. Scouts seem to be more or less evenly split on the reasoning. Some say his play is tailed off. Others say he's simply leapfrogged by Misa, Martone, and Frondell. A few suggest it was a combination of both factors. But there's kind of your top five there. So regardless of where the Predators finish, they're going to end up with a good player here. The question is going to be how good. And frankly, this is what I would love to know, because I think, in my opinion, I know what the answer should be, at least if Robbie Stanley's operating the team. I'm not Barry Trotz. I'm not a hockey executive. But let's say for the sake of this discussion, they end up with number one overall pick, and the Predators have their pick of the litter of who they're going to take in the draft. I would imagine that the Predators' evaluation, if you're going quote-unquote best player available, it's probably going to be mainly the same as everybody else's, which is Matthew Schaefer's best player in the draft, who is a defenseman. The Predators need a defenseman. I would argue they need a centerman way more than they need a defenseman, and they've never really been in this spot where they've had an opportunity to draft a centerman this high. So I would be surprised, and frankly, I think Predators fans will be irate if they get the number one overall pick and they draft a defenseman with it, even though I think the defenseman is going to end up being a great player. I think Misa should be the pick for the Predators if they land the number one overall pick. That's just me.
Corey Prondman here at The Athletic. He said if they win the lottery, Schaefer could become Roman Josi's eventual successor.
I mean, he could.
Best player's best player, man.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. Like, I think Schaefer could be a very, very good defenseman in this league. But I'm just telling you, if that's the route they go – particularly, it's one thing if they're picking fourth or fifth and he's there and they take him, which, frankly, I don't think he will be.
No, he won't be.
But it's one thing if it goes down that way. Like, if they got the number one overall pick and they chose him over a centerman, I don't think that'd go over very well.
It almost, again, it's like the best case would almost be, obviously, you want the number one pick, of course. You want to be able to dictate it, but if they actually got the third pick –
Or even like the second pick, Schaefer
goes, and it's like, okay, so.
Like if San Jose took Schaefer, which I think they will. Like, if San Jose ends up number one pick, they took Will Smith a couple years ago with the draft here in Nashville, top five pick of centerman. They took, obviously, Celebrini last year, number one pick centerman. So they've got a couple stud centermen in their in their group now, I think they'd go Schaefer. So we'll see. But those are your options if you're the Predators.
Yeah, and then you got – we've talked about Roger McQueen a little bit.
Yeah, the people still split on him.
The back injury does not make me feel like back injury.
Yeah.
Just
not we know we're talking about 17- and 18-year-olds here, so like how significant is it, but still.
Sciatica.
Yes.
Thank you. Exactly. Don't want that.
We'll be joined by Adam Kemmelman from NHL.com coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the NHL draft lottery and the options for the Predators. That's coming up. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Monday morning. NHL draft lottery day. We're going to find out later today where the Predators are picking in the draft. And to help us talk more about that, let's head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our friend Adam Kemmelman from NHL.com. Adam, good morning, brother. How we doing?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing awesome, great, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. So it could be a big day for the Predators here. We'll see where they land tonight. But, Adam, let's just start here. We know that they're going to be in the top five. So as you look at guys that are potentially there in the top five and how this could shake out, what do you make of kind of the strength of this draft class at the top of it? How good do you think this class could be for the first five picks?
Well, I think there are guys who can be contributors, maybe not as soon as next season, but I think there's guys within the next 2 to 3 years could be prime players on a team. You know, you look at someone like Matthew Schaefer, who most likely is going to be the number one pick, the defenseman from Erie in the Ontario Hockey League. He has everything you want in defenseman. He's big, he's strong, he skates well. You need a guy who can quarterback your power play, he can do it. You need a guy who can lead your penalty kill, he can do it. You need a guy who can produce, you know, offense from the blue line up a goal, you know, when you're chasing a game, he can do it. He's a guy who plays in all situations and plays really well. If you're looking for up front, a player like Michael Misa, 134 points this year with Saginaw in the Ontario League, projects to be sort of a John Tavares type, where he's not going to maybe blow you out of the water with his raw skill, but you'll look at the end of the night, he's got a goal, he's got a couple of points, and he can be a big-time producer for you, you know, without having all the big flash in his game. But he is just a hard, smart player who's going to excel in all three zones. So there's a lot of everything, depending on sort of what you're looking for in this year's draft.
So, Adam, this is a discussion we've had a lot about the Preds knowing this was coming, which is, okay, let's say they get the number one pick. Like you said, most people look at Schaefer as the top prospect in this draft. The Preds are light there now, too. They need help there, too. But they've also, they just have never been able to find that centerman that maybe you could have in a Misa. You know, this franchise has obviously struggled to draft and develop forwards. If the Preds were in that position tonight, what would you advise them to do?
If they had the number one pick, you take the best player available. And if your determination is the best player available is Matthew Schaefer, you take that player. You can't mess around when it comes to drafting for position at that point. I think from everything, and again, this is just my opinion, from everything I've seen this year, Matthew Schaefer at a premium position has separated himself from the pack in a way that, you know, he will be the number one pick in the draft, I believe. No matter who wins it, he's going to be the guy because he has, you know, NHL-ready size. You don't have to wait for him to develop physically. Obviously, you want him to get a little bit stronger and kind of build his body up a little bit more. But he's most likely going to need at least one more year of junior hockey before he's ready because he didn't play after December 30th because of the broken collarbone. So you're going to, whoever you draft with that pick, you're going to probably want to send back for another year of development. But to me, you've got a guy who plays in all situations, who is as close to NHL ready size, who plays a premium position. I think to me, whether I'm loaded on defense or not, I'm taking the best player available because you never know what can happen from 1 year to the next, from 1 week to the next. And to me, it's Matthew Schaefer. So, yes, obviously, you know, it's not any sort of great secret that Nashville has not had that number one centerman to build and develop around, that's a need. But you also need top end, top pair defensemen, and Matthew Schaefer fits that bill. And if you have the number one pick, you take the best player available. And to me, it's Matthew Schaefer.
So, Adam, what do you make of the year that Hagen's had here? Because we've obviously talked a lot about him as well. And, you know, I was reading something in the last segment from Bob McKenzie, who was talking about, you know, the split on him and him dropping down to number five in the draft for some scouts here. Obviously, he's incredibly skilled. You got Porter Martone in the mix. You know, Frundell is in the mix as well. But what do you make of Hagen specifically and the player that he projects to be at the NHL level?
I think Hagen's had a nice season in college. I don't think he had the dominant season that, you know, probably unfairly people assumed he would have walking into, you know, the BC program as an 18-year-old and just expecting him to dominate in the way that maybe Macklin Celebrini did last year. I'm sorry, 2 years ago. Maybe it's a little bit unfair, but remember, he was the number one center on probably the number one line in college hockey with Ryan Leonard and Gabe Perreault. He was the number one center on the team that won the World Junior Championship. You know, he was tied for the leading goals on that team with five. He had a really, really strong season. There were portions of it where, you know, he would, I don't want to say disappear because that's really not the right word, where the production wasn't there like you sort of expected or hoped it would be. A little bit of an up and down. But again, he's a college freshman. I mean, you kind of can't get away from that fact that he's at 18 years old playing against guys who are 22, 23. It's a hard road to climb for anybody. And I don't think it's a knock on him that he was, quote unquote, only a point-a-game player. He had 37 points in 37 games, got his team in the NCAA tournament. You know, he had a really good season. I think when people sort of measure what they think James Hagen should have done or what he did versus what he should have done, I think that you're getting into a little bit of an unfair territory. I think he projects to be a really good top-two-pair center at the next level. I don't think he's ready to jump in and be that guy in the 25-26 season, but I think if you're smart in your development with him, sort of along the same lines that Jack Hughes took to develop, where at 18 years old, you know, he jumped from the U.S. national team program into the NHL, and it was a little bit of a struggle for Jack Hughes those first, you know, 2 years, say. Then in year three, he figured it out, he hit his stride, and now you're seeing a real superstar player. I think James Hagen's could be sort of following that same track, where, you know, if you let him have that patience and give him that time to develop, to grow his body, to grow his skills, to physically develop, I think you're going to end up with a really, really outstanding player. But you need to have patience with this player. And I think teams, unfortunately, kind of fall into this, well, we take him in the top five, he's got to go right into our NHL lineup, right? Well, not necessarily. Not if you want to, if you're looking at the long haul, sacrificing 1 year for maybe 10, 12, 15 years of outstanding play, maybe that's what you have to do. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see what team is willing to take Hagen somewhere in the top five, top six, wherever he ends up. And then what do you do afterwards when it comes to the development process? Because I think that's going to be just as important as anything else.
Roger McQueen, 6'5", lots to love about his game. Back injury, which always makes me feel a little nervous. And where do you come down to Roger McQueen?
You know, he might be the most polarizing player in this year's draft, because when you look at the talent, you watch him play, you see a 6'5" guy who skates like a 5'8" guy who is just a dominant player out there. You know, you watch him, you think like Jeff Carter, you think Quentin Byfield, you know, once he kind of gets some of that quote-unquote man strength. But as you said, the back injury is very worrisome. You know, I think you saw it last year with Caden Lindstrom, another Western Hockey League player, missed a lot of time with a significant injury, and he hasn't played since last year Christmas. He was the number four pick in the draft. His talent, when he was healthy, dictated he'd be the number four pick in the draft. So, but he hasn't been able to get on the ice. So there's some concern there that, where is it all headed with Caden Lindstrom? Well, teams are watching Roger McQueen through that spectrum and saying, well, if we're going to use a top three, top four, top five pick on a guy who now has this issue, how do we know it's not going to go the same way? Now, what it helps is that Roger McQueen did come back at the end of the season, played a few regular season games, played a little bit in the playoffs for Brandon before he had another injury, which I believe is unrelated, but I'm not 100% sure on that. So teams are going to really have to do their homework on the medical side with McQueen, because if he's healthy, we might not be talking about Matthew Shaver as the absolute number one pick in the draft. Could be a completely different conversation with a fully healthy Roger McQueen. So it's a little bit of a risk reward there. How much risk are you willing to take for the potential of a huge reward?
Adam, last thing here for you. We were talking about it to begin the show. What a weekend in the NHL with the Rantanen story for Dallas in Game 7 in the third period on Saturday, and then last night's crazy finish in Winnipeg with the Jets. The Rantanen story specifically, I mean, that's an all-time legendary performance by him in that period. What did you make of what we saw in the two Game 7s over the weekend?
Just fantastic hockey. I mean, as you said, the Rantanen story just, you know, like, I'm sure if you go back to, you know, January or February, whenever the first Rantanen trade happened, I'm sure Chris McFarland, the Avalanche general manager, said, well, I'm never going to have to worry about playing this guy again in the playoffs unless we get to the Stanley Cup final, in which case, I'll live with it. You know, fast forward 3 months later, you're going against him, not just, you know, at the end of the regular season when he comes back in your division. Now you have to go against him in the playoffs. Now you might have to go against him in the playoffs for the next 8 years after this. Just, you know, it's just, you couldn't script it any, you know, better / worse, depending on your perspective. But it's just, it's, you couldn't, you know, you show this script to a Hollywood scriptwriter and they hand it back to you and go, nah, too unrealistic. This kind of thing would never happen. And here we are. And then, you know, then you look ahead to last night, to the Jets and the Blues, and you watch those first two goals get past Connor Hellebuck, and you're thinking, well, you know, here's another season of Vezina Trophy, Hart Trophy caliber play completely washed away by a poor playoff run. It happened last year in the first round. Now it's going to happen again. And you just sort of waiting for that other shoe to drop. And full marks to Winnipeg. You're missing your number one center. You're missing your number one defenseman for all but 6 or 7 minutes of that game. And they stuck with it. They grinded it out. And they were able to get that remarkable tying goal with, I believe it was 1.7 seconds left. Cole Perfetti, you know, as much as everybody talks about Rantanen the night before, I think what Cole Perfetti did in that game last night was just as huge. He was a dominant player. Every time he stepped on the ice, you just expected something to happen. And, you know, at the end, you know, full credit to Neil Pionk. He played 46 minutes, still had, the, you know, a couple of assists, including on the winning goal. You know, the Jets are moving on. And now it's going to be another meat grinder in the second round, Dallas and Winnipeg. What do either one of those teams have left from an injury standpoint? You know, Dallas is missing its best defenseman and one of its top line forwards in Miro Heiskanen and Jason Robertson. So the playoffs are a wonderful war of attrition, and you kind of saw it personified there in the first round.
Yeah, absolutely awesome stuff. Could be a big night for the Preds tonight. Looking forward to the NHL draft lottery. Adam, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us, and we'll talk to you soon.
May the lottery balls ever bounce in your favor. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Adam Kimmelman, our guest here on Robbie and Rex. So we got the Rob rant coming up next. Corey Curtis will be with us at 8 o'clock. All that ahead. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now
on Robbie and Rex Road.
You look at the plate, it's like, how could one human being even approach coming close to eating this? Texas, I think, has the most per capita.
You saw the 11,000 calorie lunch I had yesterday on my way out of town? Good God. I mean, I was in serious pain last night, but my God, that beef rib, holy cow.
Of course he is. It's like Joe Milton.
More than once, when I was in San Antonio, I corrected people who called Texas UT.
Just personally, for me, the best area in the country for food is Texas. I love, like, just the amount of things that you can find in Texas.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountains?
Texas isn't a state without the Volunteers making sure that that Texas is a state.
So have some of that.
Yeah. I mean, you can't be UT. I'm sorry, Texas.
We're vibing, Robbie.
It is that time of the day. Time for the Rob Rant. We're on 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Joe, there's plenty about the NFL draft that we get wrong. I mean, we get wrong. NFL teams get wrong. NFL media get wrong. One thing I felt pretty good about heading into this draft was, what exactly is Quinn Ewers doing? Why is he entering the draft? He should go back to college football and play a little college football. And he ended up getting taken in the seventh round, and I feel pretty validated from it. But apparently his agent, not very happy about it. This is a story coming from the New York Post, Joe. And I'll just read the first few graphs from it. An NFL draft slide sometimes doesn't come with any clarity or a pinpointed explanation. Agent Ron Slavin feels that that's the case with his client and former Texas quarterback Quinn Ewers. Prior to the three-day draft spectacle, Ewers didn't expect to be among the first 32 selections, with the second round being more of a possibility. However, he was the 13th and final quarterback taken in the 2025 draft, getting selected with the number 231 pick in the seventh round by the Miami Dolphins. Slavin told ESPN that he reached out to, quote, half the league the day after the draft to find out why Ewers had such a big slide. The answer, he said, was, quote, chicken bleep. They thought, this is a quote from Slavin, Ewers' agent, they thought he was a third or fourth round pick, but too big of a name to be a clipboard holder, which I think is chicken bleep. This is what Ewers' agent had to say. To which my response is, yeah, that answer you gave is chicken bleep. Here's what the rest of the league thought about Quinn Ewers. It's the same thing that I and you and most people thought about Quinn Ewers when they watched him play football, which is, yeah, I just don't think he's very good. I don't think he's a very good quarterback, and he would probably be much better served by going back and playing another year of college football. Probably not at Texas. He probably would have had to go somewhere else. But playing another year of college football, seeing if you can get a little bit better, and then maybe trying out the NFL draft next year. Frankly, I wasn't very surprised to see Quinn Ewers go in the seventh round. This is apparently the explanation that was given to his agent, that he was, quote, too big of a name to be holding a clipboard out there, which I just find to be a preposterous reason. And I don't believe that that's what NFL teams actually thought.
Yeah, that sounds like some agent BS. Some agent bull bleep.
Not
replace
chicken?
The chicken bleep with bull bleep from the agent here. That didn't make sense to me. I understand the Shedeur Sanders thing. I do get that. It's like everything that comes with Shedeur Sanders, you want that as a backup? I mean, is it really, is it worth it? I mean, I still would say, the talent could end up being worth it. But I totally get that being a deterrent if you're not like, he is our guy. Too big of a name to be a – I mean, the NFL's filled with people who are like great college quarterbacks who sometimes just don't even sniff the league.
And I think they're also trying to make this out like because of his recruiting profile back in high school.
Yeah.
Because he was – he was an outstanding – recruit. I think he was like the number two recruit in the class.
Somebody had him number one.
Somebody had him number one. Yeah. But how many guys in the history of football have been high level recruits that maybe don't end up having the same college career that you think? And they end up getting drafted and they're like fifth or sixth round players. And no NFL team is like, well, this guy was a heck of a recruit in high school, so we can't take him to be our backup. Like, it makes no sense. I read this story and I was like, all right, this agent is just totally full of it here. This is just total bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, someone, maybe a team BS'd him, I guess, but like the half the league said this. Yeah, so reading, like, this is the writer here of the story. And in other words, NFL teams thought Ewers, who was this big recruit, was too big a name to have as the development quarterback. It's one of the consequences discovered in the NIL era of college ball. There's a lot of consequences in the NIL era. One of the consequences is not that, like, teams in the NFL give a crap ever about what somebody was as a recruit. Ever. Makes no sense.
Yeah. I watch. You tell me. When I saw that Quinn Ewers was coming out in the draft this year,
we
had a conversation.
We absolutely
did. What is he doing? Like, why are you going in the draft this year? I don't think, first off, here's the other part of this story that's bullcrap that I have a hard time believing. Quinn Ewers didn't expect to be a first-round pick, but maybe in the second round, maybe being more in the second. I was like, well, who are you paying attention to? Because there was never any sort of suggestion that I saw that he was going to be a second-round pick.
Yeah, we talked about, you know, Brugler had – he did have his way too early last year, had him in the first round this year. But, I mean, watching him this year, he just wasn't – you know, to me, he just doesn't quite have the tools to be a top quarterback. Yeah, I guessed – I mean, I could have bought fifth, sixth. He went seventh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that big of a slide?
I mean, not by people living in the real world. I mean, every single agent – again, I've talked about this before too. You know, like you cover a college beat, and you know, you talk to the guys who are leaving, trying to get on the draft. Talk to all their agents, and like every single one of them has their client projected, and have told their client they're going three rounds earlier than they really are for sure. So if someone says, "Yeah, I'm probably like four, you know, fourth round pick." Okay, so UDFA seventh. I'm hoping for like the second. Okay, so you're about a fifth rounder. Yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes you actually do have top, but that's just how it goes. So some agents. Like this guy, I think he's just covering his butt with this stuff, you know?
Yeah. You may have to, who knows? Like, hopefully Tua can stay healthy this year in Miami, but we'll see if Quinn Ewers, like, makes the team first off. And maybe he has to play at some point.
I wouldn't be surprised to see him on the field this year.
It's probably not going to end up well for the Miami Dolphins.
The Dolphins and Browns play. We get some Quinn Shadur. Quarterback duel.
615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. Corey Curtis will join us. Coming up next from News 2, we'll get his thoughts on the Titans, the NHL draft lottery for the Preds, and a whole lot more. That's coming up next. Robbie and Rexrow, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.